Welcome to the latest episode of Your Wealth with Gemma Dell, a podcast series designed to help you create, grow, and protect your wealth.
For our very first episode, I am talking to Katie Whiffen, who is the Head of Asset Management Strategy and Implementation at NAB Asset Management. And we're going to be talking about saving and investing for your kids' education. This is a really important topic for both me and Katie because we both have small kids. And we wanted to talk in some detail about the options that are available to both parents and grandparents or anyone else who's interested, who want to ensure that their little ones get a high quality education without incurring a huge financial burden. Katie is an expert in investing. She has over 20 years of experience in asset management, which means researching investments and fund managers, creating high quality investment products, and explaining them to investors and financial planners. What's more important on this topic for me anyway is that she's got a very personal investment in the subject because she has little ones too. Katie, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me on the show.
So tell me, how important is this issue of saving for kids' education?
Well, when you think about saving for education, you can probably put it into three buckets. There's childcare for when your children are under five, there's primary and secondary education, which is where lots of people focus, but there's also saving for university. So when you think about it, if you're saving for education, you're looking at 21-year journey for you and your children, which is going to have an incredible impact on your family's overall wealth.
Yeah, so that's terrifying when you put it like that. And look, it is something people do think about quite seriously. My husband and I discuss it also. I think the other thing that's coming up quite frequently at the moment is people are talking about helping their kids buy a home. So it's not just starting.
Absolutely.
Not just going to 21
so it's
years.
Like a
it goes on forever.
40-year commitment. Absolutely.
Excellent. Yes. Excellent. So my kids are still in daycare at this point in time, and we're not worried about school fees just yet. But we had children a bit later than most, so we're going to be still paying for school fees when we're starting to think quite seriously about saving for retirement as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So there is a big crossover point. A lot of people, Generation X's, started having children much later than the previous generations. So they have, you're looking at people in their 40s being first home buyers as well as first-time parents. When you think the average mortgage is 25 years, that's a long time that you're going to be doing both, trying to fund the education and pay off your home. So it's not just the old question of do I pay off my home and also save additional amount into superannuation, which is well held in the press. It's like, well, how do I save for my children's education, pay off my home and do my superannuation? So it's become quite a mental burden for people if they're not setting themselves up right from an infrastructure perspective on where to invest.
So let's start with the basics and maybe we should look at some examples. Looking at the options that are available to people. So if you want your child to go to a private high school, if that's the most common example, it's probably the issue that we're looking at. You would start paying fees in year seven. If you're in Queensland, it's going to be year eight, but let's say year seven for most of the other states. And you're going to be paying them until your child is in year 12. Mm-hmm. And then you have to multiply that by the number of children that you're going to be going to private school. So you need to start saving when?
Well, so it's quite interesting. A lot of people don't start saving before the kids get to school. So a lot of families are actually paying that. You know, so for the average school in Sydney or Victoria at the moment, you're looking at about $25,000 to $30,000 per year, mm-hmm. plus other expenses on top of that.
Yep.
And many families actually just pay that out of cash flow. So when you think about it, that's a substantial amount that's going out of someone's pay after tax to fund that. And people really struggle with it. So you hear a lot of stories about people paying for these expenses on their credit cards, and it becomes a bit of a financial burden for them. But they're really committed to going to private schools, and there's no change in their mind. What would be ideal, of course, is if people set up a saving strategy sooner to make that, and so have a little burden, a slight burden less often, so that when they get to that period of time, it's not an enormous financial burden on their overall wealth and lifestyle.
Okay, so if you are in a situation like me, so my children are one and nearly four, mm-hmm. and we're thinking about this, you know, it's going to be less than 10 years for my son, he's nearly four, it's going to be 10 years ish for my daughter, mm-hmm. that we have to save for this pretty considerable expense. So let's say $30,000 a year, mm-hmm. plus the extra uniforms, mm-hmm. extravagant excursions and whatnot, mm-hmm. Per year in today's dollars. That's the other thing to consider.
Absolutely. So you're looking, so there's a couple of things that you can start with right now. And the first is if you are if your children are in daycare, mm-hmm. that is an expense that when they first go into primary school, you will no longer have to pay. Mm. So when you're looking at the average childcare across Australia, it's about $101 a day, so over $500 a week, mm-hmm. Before any subsidies that might be available to you. If your children are stopping having, if you get to stop paying that because they're now moving into primary school system, a fantastic piece of infrastructure to set up for yourself is put that just into a savings plan. Right. Whatever additional amount you've had, you've already got the discipline of paying up that money. Mm-hmm. Use it and invest it to be disciplined about saving for their education in the future. And so you can start that from when, in your case, your four-year-old turns five, goes off to primary school, the costs for their education drop. Mm. Utilise that free cash flow to invest.
Right, okay. And if we want to start a bit earlier, because I am starting to feel that might not be the worst idea I've ever had, is getting on top of it early, same approach?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So what you want to do is to take is to try and structure your savings around some infrastructure so it's just not so much of a burden for you. So the first thing that people might like to do, and the easiest one for most people, is just save in cash. Like in any, you know, have a separate account where as part of every pay goes towards investing and saving for your child's future. So over 10 years, hopefully that will compound so that if you're looking at saving, let's call it, you know, about $200 a week. Mm-hmm. If you can save that, you're looking at $10,000 a year, you've got 10 years, you should end up with $100,000 at the end of it. Now, that's not particularly tax effective. Mm. There's no deductions associated with that. Mm-hmm. Interest rates are at all-time lows. Yeah. And hopefully if you've got your mortgage, it is also that you will stay that way, let's be frank. That is a really easy way to set yourself up for success. Mm-hmm. With $200 a week, if you've been paying childcare fees, it's not a significant financial burden to fund and set yourself up for future. And also because it is in something just like a savings account, if anything else disastrous happens in your life, you also have a lovely pot of money to prepare yourself and overcome any of those issues.
Okay. So cash is one option. It's obviously got its drawbacks currently. Mm-hmm. Rates are just terribly low when you take tax and inflation into consideration. Given current variables, you'll probably end up with what you saved at the end, not much more than that, which is a bit depressing, but it's better than not having
Absolutely.
Saved.
Absolutely, at least you'll have something. You'll have something. Yeah.
You talked about the mortgage. For some people, is an offset account.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's really interesting. That's what a lot of people, that's their default, is I'll just save in my offset account. Mm. One thing we have to be careful of, and this comes back to how we set up the infrastructure for our own savings, is that often people don't decompartmentalise their money. Mm. So it is really good if you're going to use an offset account, make sure that you recognise that that's not there for the renovation, that's not there for next year's family holiday, that is absolutely there for saving for your children's education. So if you're going to do it, just make sure that you are, that everyone in the family who has access to that account knows what it is there for. Mm. It is effective, of course, because you have that offset arrangement against your mortgage, paying the interest and hopefully reducing the term of your mortgage. But again, with interest rates being so low, there's not necessarily as huge an impact that is going to have as when, say, interest rates were 8% or 12%.
Yeah, right. I think also there's a lot of data now about people retiring with debt and people going into those pre-retiree years with debt.
Yes.
The problem with using an offset account is you will withdraw it and then you still owe money on your home, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So you withdraw it, you spend it on the renovation, you spend it on the holiday, you spend it on something else rather than retiring the mortgage overall.
Yes. Yeah, or you spend it on the kids' education and then you still have a massive mortgage. That's right. The other problem. It's like, oh God, still got that to deal with. Okay, so the next thing I wanted to talk about, though, is a different way of approaching it. Tell me a little bit about this one.
Yeah, so of course, when I talk about saving into a check account, it is just saving. It's not investing. Most people, particularly if they're both working, they're working hard, and you should make sure that your money is working at least as hard as you are. There's a couple of ways you can set up for that. So you can do, instead of just a regular savings plan into cash, you can of course set up a regular savings plan into managed funds. Mm. And the idea there, you get the benefit of dollar cost averaging, so you're just averaging through the ups and downs of the markets over time, but hopefully you'll get much more growth from your investment, even in a balanced fund, which is a mix of diversified assets. Over the last 20 years, you would have still got on average about 7% per annum return, which is significantly higher than cash, so your savings can get there faster. So that's instead of using just cash, certainly use managed funds or the many options that are available on the markets from ETFs, M funds, etc., to get you where you need to go. But perhaps a more powerful strategy on top of that is making, instead of doing that dollar cost averaging, that incremental payment, so putting that $200 a week away, instead of that $200, you can borrow to invest, put more into and get more exposure to growth assets now, and that can be incredibly tax effective and means that you're exposed to more growth assets for longer. So hopefully the money will be working even harder for you over that 10-year period.
Okay, so you're talking about a specific product here. I'm going to be quite explicit, and the reason I'm being explicit is because I'm quite seriously thinking about this one. Generally, in this particular situation, we're never going to give any product recommendations, and we're not going to talk about what you should do with your wealth. But this one I really like for me. And I also mentioned that Noel Whittaker wrote an article about this particular strategy, just because it hasn't been available to people before, saying it was one of the best wealth innovations he's seen.
Okay, so what you're talking about is equity builder. Mm-hmm. So I just mentioned borrowing to invest is a really powerful way to get you where you need to go, particularly if you've got a longer term time horizon like 10 years. We all know about borrowing to invest in property. Mm-hmm. We take out a loan and we pay that loan back, hopefully. We've known historically about investing in growth assets like the share market and managed funds for a long time, but historically that's been around managed about margin calls. And the problem with a loan with a margin call is when your wonderful growth assets takes a dip in the market of 20, 30%, you have to pay a margin call, which terrifies a lot of people.
Yeah.
But with Equity Builder, it is a principal and interest loan with no margin calls, and it's available to invest across any professional managed investment. Mm. So what that means is that you get all the benefits of leverage that something like a home loan or something like a margin loan would have given you in the past, with none of the fear that if the underlying investment moves that you have to make a payment or sell off those assets.
Yeah.
So it's very, very powerful in terms of that it can fit. It's a really, it's a relatively known quantity about how you're going to have to pay this debt back. There'll be no calls on your investment, so you can get the exposure you want. It's really tax effective, so generally interest payments, the interest cost is generally tax deductible every year. We see people using Equity Builder to go into investments such as separately managed accounts with Australian equities that have franking credits, so that they can have a really tax effective investment. And when you think about it in terms of the numbers, you're still with these type of investments. We find you have a small component that is your own money that you invest, and then you have a larger component that we will borrow against. The average Australian, when we look at some of our data, probably has about $30,000 in a variety of shares and managed funds that they're pretty passive around.
Mm-hmm.
If you take that $30,000 and invest another and borrow $70,000 with something like Equity Builder, you then have $100,000 invested in the share market. Aside from obviously the underlying investments are professionally managed, the interest cost is tax deductible. And if it's a tax effective investment you've gone into, like shares, you'll get great franking credits. So it's nice and tax efficient. But what that means, you've got to repay the loan back.
Yeah.
Okay, so you've got to repay the loan back. Now, we spoke before about saving about $200 a week to fund your $100,000 if you're going to a savings plan. With that $70,000 loan that you would have with your $100,000 investment, you'll be paying back about the same amount. So about, $170, $200 a week would be your loan repayment.
Mm.
And that's before interest cost deductions or any franking credits that you might get from the investment. So your cash flow can be the same or better with just a regular savings plan as opposed to borrowing to invest. So it's very, very powerful. But the most powerful component is, of course, that you're leveraged. So you're investing in a growth asset today. The more you've got exposed to that growth asset, if you've got a long-term view, the more you will have at the end of that 10-year period. So if you've got your $30,000 of your own money, you borrow $70,000. Hopefully in 10 years' time, if you're in an investment that's getting 7% per annum return, you'll have $200,000 at the end of that period of time. So it's far more powerful in terms of that growth and exposing yourself to growth than just a simple savings plan.
It's to me, it makes a huge amount of sense, that idea of just having a little bit working for you from the beginning is nice. But to have a lot working for you from the beginning, that's very attractive indeed. And the idea that you're contributing the same amount from a cash flow perspective is really important.
Yes.
I'm the kind of person who gets very anxious about the idea of a margin call.
Yes.
I know many other people who are fine with it. I'm just not one of them, and particularly where I need the lump sum at the end for something like school fees, where you can't really mess around with your start date too much. the idea that it's fully paid off in that time frame, I also find really comforting. So I think it's really clever the way you put it together. For people who would not be looking at that kind of of stuff, we do get asked quite frequently about education savings plan in the traditional sense.
Yeah. And look, education savings plans have been great from a marketing perspective to make people aware that there's something that you can do today to save for your children's education. A lot of those education plans, though, are really built around university and are quite explicit about when your child can access them and under what circumstances they can that you can access them. So while they have been, you know, from a marketing perspective, they've been relatively popular and people talk about them quite a bit. In terms of people who take up education bonds, it's been quite low, surprisingly low. And that's because of those issues about when you can access and how you can access it. People don't like being locked in for something that they may or may not get access to in the future. So there's that little degree of uncertainty for people makes them a little bit more cautious about whether or not they should do that. And the thing with whether you do it through whether you're saving for this through your offset account or through a savings plan or through something like Equity Builder is it's your call about when you access the money. If your circumstances change, you can do whatever you like. But if you've been saving into an education plan, you're more limited about that.
I think what's also tricky with those ones is the tax treatment is extremely punitive if you do anything prior to that point.
Absolutely.
So what you get back is...
Well, fortunately, it's not like tax legislation ever changes in this country. So, you know, we'll be sweet.
Many years making a living out of talking about tax legislation. Thank you very much.
So, and that also makes people uncomfortable. Whenever you have complicated legislation that's not easy to understand or to explain, to a lot of, you know, grandparents want to take up education bonds, want to do the right thing by their children and their grandchildren. But they get confused by the impact of things like tax, and they get confused by some of the wordings in those documents, which make them a little bit more, you know, concerned around it.
Okay. What about investment bonds and insurance bonds?
Yeah, so investment bonds and insurance bonds, they're pretty much the same thing in terms of the nomenclature. But again, they're a great way of saving. They're sort of an old product that has been reborn with people wanting to save outside of super. Again, they can be incredibly tax efficient because so if you have an investment today and you realise it in 10 years' time, if it was just a normal investment outside of an insurance bond, you're going to pay capital gains tax on the realisation of any gains in that. Inside an insurance bond, that would not be the case. However, you will be paying 30% tax. The underlying bond itself will be paying 30% tax on the investment. If this is lower than your current marginal tax rate, fantastic. It's really good to be in it. But like, not dissimilar to education plans in some ways, there are some significant not disadvantages, but there are you might not get the tax outcome that you want if you withdraw early.
Yes.
There are issues around if you add too much to the bond in one particular year. So if you up your savings dramatically in one year versus another year, that may have implications of restarting the 10-year tax-free time frame. So they're a lovely way to get an outcome. Again, it is setting yourself up for infrastructure mentally and a light mental framing. It's good to say that this is for 10 years. If you have most people, if they've got an insurance bond, they know that it's for at least 10 years. They're not actually locked into it, but they have that good mental framing about it is for 10 years. So it means that people usually are disciplined about continuing to save for it. But oftentimes with insurance bonds, there's not a lot of investment choice in terms of what you can invest in. If you're investing for 10 years, for most people, it's a long-term time frame. You're relatively young. Most people want to go into more aggressive assets like Australian equities, international equities, have a diversified portfolio. A lot of insurance bonds don't have as much investment choice.
Yeah.
And the other thing that can make people a little more cautious is when they look at the absolute returns, because they're after-tax returns, when you're looking at your statement or you're looking at comparison returns in the paper, they look really low.
Yeah, they're not that sexy, are they?
Yeah, not that sexy. And that's the thing is that people, because they're not taking into account the additional tax savings in when they're looking at those returns, it makes them feel that that might not be worth it. But they're definitely worth investigating. It's just making sure that you understand what the consequences are and if that level of tax over that period of time is going to be more beneficial than in fact saving outside of an insurance bond.
Yeah, okay. So we've looked at quite a range of things. If I bunch them up a little bit, realistically, you want to start saving as early as possible, yes?
Yes.
So we know that compounding is one of the great miracles.
Absolutely.
If you have it working for you, the later you start, the less it is working for you. So we're thinking savings plan, as you said, just get the infrastructure in place, just start doing something. Mm-hmm. If you are paying somewhat painful childcare fees like some of us, then perhaps starting once those childcare fees finish and utilising those funds just straight into a savings plan of some description is a great start. But if you can start earlier, please do. I think that's, I will try. getting started earlier. So savings plan just into a straightforward cash account is one approach. Yeah. Then you can look at more interesting diversified investments that give you a little bit more tax effectiveness and a lot more growth potential. Mm-hmm. So looking at managed funds, SMAs, ETFs, whatever. Traditionally, I'm just thinking grandparents would often buy shares.
Absolutely.
For kids. Telecom bonds, I remember back in the day.
Yeah, absolutely. My grandfather held the original share certificates in the bottom of the drawer for each of us. So very much that meant that old school mentality of just buying shares, keeping the bottom drawer, literally in his case, and handing it over when required.
Yeah, so this is sort of the more modern version of that. And most of the products that you mentioned, so the managed funds and so on, actually do have structured regular savings plans.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what you want. Make it easy for yourself.
Yeah.
Like if you've made the commitment to
go for it. They'll just direct debit for you.
That's right. They'll just direct debit for you, so it's set up automatically. And is that the great thing is we always make these big, we think it's going to be a massive mental commitment. But once you have actually started, you'll forget that you never had it. And you'll just get this great statement saying, this is now how much it's worth, this is now how much it's worth, because you're automating yourself towards success when you set up something like a regular savings plan.
Yeah. So, and you've also got the investment insurance bond option in there, because it's roughly the same concept, right? You're still putting money away on a regular basis.
Absolutely.
And then if you're willing to take rather more risk and you are happy to have more money working for you at the beginning and pay down debt rather than working the other way, then you can look at something like Equity Builder, which gives you that sort of longer term debt and investment type structure.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And you've described it perfectly, because there's lots of options out there. But the best thing that you can do is sit down, set yourself up for where do I need to get to over what time frame. Recognize there's lots of ways that that markets and investments can help you, but just start.
Yes. Always the most important thing. Something is better than nothing, right?
That's right. Stop talking about it and actually start doing it. The most powerful thing you can do, though, in terms of what investment is right for you, is it's the investment that you understand and will hopefully get you where you need to go as soon as possible.
Perfect. And where would you suggest that people go if they want to know more about any of this?
Yeah, well, obviously there's lots of financial services websites out there, but if they were looking specifically around Equity Builder, definitely suggest NAB. Just search for NAB Equity Builder online. There will be a whole lot of information there around how that works. For insurance bonds, likewise, there are lots of ways for people to access and understand that information that's out there and available right now. Most importantly, if you have any questions, it's always great to seek financial advice. Doesn't take more than a 30-minute conversation to know if that advisor is right for you and to take the next step so that they can really thoughtfully plan out which approach is going to be right for you, your family and your children's future.
Thank you for listening to Your Wealth with Gemma Dale. To stay up to date, please subscribe to this podcast series or email us at yourwealth@nab.com.au.
Please note that any advice provided in this podcast has been prepared without taking into account your objectives, financial circumstances, or needs. Before acting, you should consider the appropriateness of the information. To find out more, please visit nab.com.au.